Hi, I'm Ken Sweeney. This is The Comfortable Spot. Welcome. Today, I'm joined by broadcaster Sandy Kay. Sandy has built up an impressive reputation as a journalist in both radio and television in Australia, and recently embarked on a new venture as a host of A Breath of Fresh Air, which is a radio show featuring conversations with legends in pop and rock music. What started out as a COVID project is now a weekly hour-long show that is broadcast on radio stations right across the world. Sandy took some time out to chat with me about her life, her stories as a journalist in Australia, and her fast-paced radio show. So I hope you're sitting comfortably and happy to stay with us. Sandy, hi, how are you? Thanks for joining me on the Comfortable Spot podcast.
Oh, and it feels very comfortable to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, we're really kind of going to the limit of time zones here, aren't we? It's 11 o'clock in the evening where I am. So where are you?
I'm Melbourne, Australia, and I've got 8 o'clock in the morning. So I'm having breakfast and you're ready to go to bed.
Yeah, I'm telling you, yeah. It's funny because I've been to Australia a few times and I always seem to get calls and, you know, for work in the middle of the night, even though I've told everybody I'm not going to be even remotely near Ireland. I'm in Australia for the next couple of weeks, but never matters. I still get that, you know, 4 o'clock call in the morning, some guy sitting at his desk and it's the afternoon in Ireland, you know?
Yeah. Everybody, no matter where they are, nobody sees outside their time zones at all, do they? That everyone's world focuses on where they are. Yeah, we're at the other end.
I've got in touch with you because I've started to follow your podcast, Breath of Fresh Air. What a podcast. I really enjoy listening to this. I'm a music freak. So your podcast has got this unique blend of eclectic mix of guests from all over the world, all time periods within music, and it suits me down to the ground. It's my comfortable spot.
Oh, that's so good to hear. I'm so glad about that.
I have to say congratulations, yeah.
Oh, thank you. I really, really appreciate that. It's been a while in the making, this podcast, A Breath of Fresh Air. I'm a journalist of long standing here in Australia. I've always done radio and television, and I was doing radio live music and entertainment reports for various radio stations, you know, leading up to COVID. And I only did it really for the lifestyle, you know, didn't pay you any money, but I would get tickets for movies and for shows and for concerts and thought, yeah, this is a really good gig. Anyway, when COVID hit, some of my radio stations said, our people are not coming into the station anymore. We've got massive holes on air to fill. Do you think you could build this show out and give it to us as a one-hour show? It would really help us. So I went through a mammoth learning curve. I'm not really technically minded. Well, I certainly wasn't at that point, and learned to build a show on my little laptop. And of course, my first love is music. I don't think I ever progressed beyond being about a 14 or 15 year old back in the day. And in fact, when I was about 9 years old, my parents would go out on a Sunday afternoon and I would rearrange the furniture, and my mother had a single long-stemmed blue vase, you know, that you'd put a rose in or something, and that became my microphone. And I would sit there and interview people like the Beatles or the Monkees or Elvis Presley or, you know, whoever I was in love with at the time. Funny how that kind of led to doing this all these many years later. But anyway, so I built this show on my laptop and I started reaching out to many of those people that I'd loved when I was 14 and 15 years old. Particularly, I started in America because they were the big stars of the day. And I started reaching out to the Alice Coopers and to the John Oates and the Daryl Halls and the, Peter Frampton, who lives in America but obviously isn't American. And lo and behold, they were available because it was COVID and they were in lockdown, and they said, yeah, sure, we'll talk to you. And I was picking up some amazing interviews. It's lucky that I had my training as a journalist and have been a journalist for the last 40 years, because I didn't make a total idiot of myself in talking to them. But I have to tell you, when I spoke to Mickey Dolenz.
That's from the Monkees.
Of the Monkees, that's right. I became that 14-year-old again. I could hardly put my words together. it was quite amazing. I haven't been quite so stage struck or what do you call it?
Gobsmacked.
Yeah, I haven't been that gobsmacked in years. I've never really lost for words, and I was certainly lost for words with him. So that's how it started. I started putting a radio show together, and I started giving it away to community radio stations all across the world. Today it's heard on around 150 radio stations from Kenya to Bolivia and everywhere in between, through Canada, the UK, New Zealand, the Thailands and the Philippines, a whole lot of countries, Chile. So I'm very excited about that. I probably should have put it up as a podcast then. I wouldn't be quite in the position I'm in now with that, because I've now entered the world of podcasting and have absolutely no idea of how to get ears on it. It's a totally different thing. You can know traditional media and broadcast media well. And I guess what I do well is, and I hope you agree with me, is package up this show really nicely. It's highly produced. I spend a bit of money paying a lovely audio engineer in Brazil to mix and master it for me. And the quality of my guests is still going pretty strong. I really love who I'm talking to. I'm totally passionate about it.
Yeah, there's a couple of things there I want to take you back to, actually. First of all, it surprised me that as a 9-year-old, most 9-year-olds, I have a 9-year-old and I have a 5-year-old, and the 5-year-old is into singing and the 9-year-old is trying to sing as well. So I'm surprised that you said to me the first thing you did as a 9-year-old was you wanted to interview the people, rather than saying I wanted to be like the people that I love. And that's great. That's brilliant. So you had a really early path. Your path was really set out very early.
I might have made more money if I pursued the path of wanting to be like them rather than talk to them.
Yeah, it's the same. My thing about the podcast, it's kind of similar to yours in a sense where I'm just looking at, you know, overall the last couple of years, people who have been following, admiring, might have been reading books by them, whatever, and just getting in touch with them and saying, look, you know, would you like to have a chat? You know, and it's as you say, you're trying to make it as comfortable and pleasant as possible. As I always like to say, there's no gotcha moments in any of our podcasts, which I think is really important. But it's the same thing. I felt when I interviewed Majur, who I've had a huge, you know, love for since I was 10 years of age. And it's like the way we're talking here now, because our audience can't see it, but we're on Zoom, so I can see you, you can see me. And normally I don't usually do that. Only recently I've begun to do it. But I, for the first time in the podcast, I did it with Majur. And like you, I was just sitting there, I was waiting. He just came on, and normally I'd clock in straight away and say, hi, how are you? But just for a few seconds, I just went, oh my God.
Wow.
Yeah, this moment has come, you know? And I just thought it's great. So it's great to see that professionals like you have that. And can I ask you, like, does that happen a lot with your podcast? Do you kind of get nervous even now, or is that something that's passed?
Mostly it's passed. There is the odd one that catches me a bit unawares. I got to admit that just recently I spoke to Graham Nash from Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young.
Yeah.
And I was a bit nervous about talking to him too. Another one that made me a little nervous was Elvis Costello, because I heard how difficult he is to interview, and he is. And there was, the publicist had given me a 15-minute window, and for the podcast, you want to go a whole lot longer than that so that you can edit it down. And I didn't have longer to go with him. And he's terse, and he gives you just standard answers, and you couldn't draw him out. I mean, my whole thing is to be able to have this warm sort of fireside chat with these big names and talk about things with them that they wouldn't normally talk about with journalists of any ilk. I did manage to draw Elvis Costello out, I'm pleased to say. He gave me a story about how he used to travel on the tube all the time, and he would put a hat and a coat on so that nobody recognised him, and he thought it was kind of funny that he would travel amongst all of the plebs and nobody knew who he was. But, I had to kind of break him down from that, here I am, what do you want for 15 minutes sort of place, to, hey, just chat with me warmly, calmly, like I'm your friend. And we kind of got that. And, yes, I think you and I do have that in common, that we want the guests to feel really comfortable, and that we want the listener to feel really like they're a fly on the wall or almost part of the conversation too. That's really important. It's not just a standard PR chat with anybody that you're talking to. It's about imagining yourself sitting in a cozy lounge room with them and, asking them whatever you feel like and hearing their stories.
Yeah, I just thought that interview you did with Elvis Costello was brilliant. It was actually the first one I listened to. I listened to that one and then I listened to Andy McKay, who I love from Roxy Music. He's just one of my heroes. And I said to myself, Elvis Costello sounds like a really easy interview. So I've been fooled, or either you came across pretty well.
I had to work really hard with him to get him to loosen up a bit. And in fact, then he was happy to keep talking and the publicist came on the line trying to wind us up. And he's going, no, just give me a few more minutes here. And I thought, yeah, okay, I've cracked him. That was great. I've got to tell you, one I had the most trouble with, I chased, and you'd know yourself, in this game, you're often months and months in chasing the artist that you want to speak to, the guest that you want to have on the show. And I had chased Gordon Lightfoot for the better part of a year, back and forward to the manager, to the PA, to whoever, please, 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 please let me talk to Gordon. I'm a massive fan. Let me talk to Gordon. Eventually they said, yes, of course, you can now talk to Gordon. Okay. When I got on the phone, and of course, Gordon Lightfoot at 83, I think he is was not capable of doing a Zoom. It's much easier when you can talk to somebody on Zoom, you can see their face. And I've got to say, it's much easier to edit the interview, much more pleasant for me to edit the interview from the Zoom than from my recording on my Zoom H6 too. So anyway, Gordon couldn't manage to do Zoom. It was phone only, the old-fashioned way. Gordon Lightfoot was the biggest disappointment I have ever had. He was like speaking to your 83-year-old grandfather with their hearing aid out. It was awful. I had to work so hard and repeat the questions so many times. And he ain't what he used to be, I have to tell you. The editing job that I did, I mean, I won't say too much about it. I don't really want to talk negatively about him. Sure. I still love him and I think what he's done in his life is amazing. But the interview process was so difficult and the edit job was so painstaking to try and make him sound coherent.
Yeah.
It was an absolute nightmare. So that was takes the cake as being my most difficult one, I think. I had a major battle with Tony Burrows. Do you know him?
Yep.
He was in Brotherhood of Man. So Tony Burrows is also 80 years old now and he's been the voice of so many of these session musician bands that have been put together. So he was always the voice behind and never the face of. He never did public appearances with any of the groups. He just lent his voice to the music. Anyway, when I first approached him, I said, Tony, I really want to talk to you about all the music that you've made. You've made such a prolific contribution to music. He says, I don't want to go over all of those old stories again, Sandy. I just don't want to do it. I said, okay, well, let's talk about what you're doing today. He said, well, I do a lot of crossword puzzles today. You know, we've just come out of lockdown. I do a lot of crossword puzzles and a bit of gardening and I go shopping with my wife. I said, great, we'll talk about that. Oh, no, he doesn't want to do that. I worked on him for months. Please, Tony, I know our audience would love to hear from you. Let's talk about what you're doing today. How are you feeling today, reflecting back? You know, by the time I got him, he was so happy to talk about all of those hits that he made, uh-huh, all of those years dating back to the 60s. So don't let that put you off. I think if you want the guest, I mean, you've got to be a little bit au fait about what they are doing today and maybe hit them up with that first, but then walk them down memory lane again. Look, I think that all artists love to talk about their favourite subject, and that's them. And it really doesn't matter how many times they've talked about it before. You can always find a new angle to talk about those same issues with them.
I wanted to ask you, because you've been in broadcast journalism for a while, there's a different way to doing interviews now on TV, isn't there? And you know, when you look back at, say, interviews on television from, say, the 1970s and 80s, be it in Ireland, UK or America, the guests seem to be given more time to talk about themselves. Whereas nowadays, when you look at all of these fast-paced programmes, particularly in America with Jimmy Kimmel, UK has, Erwin Graham Norton from Ireland, and I'm sure Australia has its own. They all seem to have this way of a guest just coming on and just talking about their film or talking about their TV show. Do you think that's a negative thing now? I mean, do you think the old way of interviewing people is lost? And podcast maybe has taken that back.
Yeah, I can't agree more. I really do think that's been lost. I think that people get onto these talk shows to pitch their product, and that's all they get to talk about. That you're right, that's the only time they're given, because it's more about the host than it is about the guest. And when we grew up and were taught how to be journalists, you know, way back in the day, we were taught that it's all about the guest. It's not about you. You're only there to throw a really specific short question. You don't go on and on about your opinion. Nobody's supposed to give a damn about what you think. You're just there to facilitate moving the guests through various questions and answers. And I think we don't get to see the more personal side of a lot of these artists these days at all. You just get a snapshot of what they're doing, and that's what they're there for. We know much more about the hosts themselves and get to see their idiosyncrasies than we do about the guests. And I think you're 100% right with that too. That's where podcasts fill the gap. But there are not many podcasts, as far as I can make out, like yours and mine, that do feature these, well, particularly entertainer type guests. There's maybe a handful. Everybody's kind of gone on to various subject matter that they want to talk about, and that's great, because there are a lot of interested audience members that want to hear particular subjects. But to get the light and shade of various performers, there's not too many of us doing it yet.
And it intrigues me, because you look at movie stars now, they have to be so image conscious, much more than they were, say, in the 70s or 80s. And you'll take an artist like, say, Tom Cruise, who is probably the biggest box office draw. I mean, he's practically rescued cinema with his recent movie there. And yet we know very little about Tom Cruise. And when they want to interview Tom Cruise and they try to do that, they end up going down the wrong road. That road that he doesn't like to talk about, and that's mainly his religion. But when it just doesn't get to me why he doesn't do that interview about his previous movies, or, you know, whether he would like to do TV. I mean, those are the questions that I would like to ask, because I genuinely think that regardless of who he is personally, people love him across the globe. They probably like to listen to him reminisce about his favourite films, or, you know, his one films that he would love to do again or whatever. You know, all those nice questions that people lack. And I think that this is where television is beginning to fail. They either want that gotcha moment, as you say, or they want to have him there for 5 minutes saying something goofy, but eventually talking about the film that he's currently in.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I would like to know what Tom Cruise does in his spare time, how he fills his time, what books he reads, what movies he likes to watch, stuff like that. But the thing with people like Tom Cruise is that if you want to interview him, you've got to hand in a list of questions ahead of time. And I don't know about you, some journalists can work that way. I certainly can't. My questions come off the back of whoever I'm talking to's answers, and that's the way the conversation flows. I'm not particularly strategic in what I want to get out of them at all. I have a vague idea, but if they take me somewhere more interesting, then that's where I'm going to follow. So you can't, there's no wiggle room there with somebody like a Tom Cruise, because you've got to hand in five questions and the publicist or the manager comes back and says, no, you can't answer. You can't ask question number two, and no, he won't answer anything about religion, and no, he won't tell you about his last movie. So you're left with a very strict regime of where you can go, which makes for very boring interviewing and very boring answering. So, yeah, people like that are no good. But, you know, just to get back to your point about doing them on Zoom, I find it very interesting that some of the bigger female stars that I've had a chat to of late refuse to come onto Zoom with video. And I've said, why? Or they come on and they say, but you can't use the video. And I tend to use the video on my website, which is abreathoffreshair.com.au. And it's like, why can't I use their video? Oh, no. In fact, I had KD Lang. Do you know her?
Yes, the Canadian songwriter, yeah.
Gorgeous girl. She's not even 40. I think she's 45 years old, 48 years old now. And I was told by the publicist, oh, no, but she won't do video Zoom. She'll only do audio. I said, why? She's just gorgeous. Anyway, she came on with the audio. I said, Katie, what are you hiding here? You know, I want to see your face. It makes it so much easier to talk to you. So she said, oh, okay, whatever. And she pressed the video button to let me see her. And she had her hair in foils because she was having her hair highlighted, and she had a turban around her head as well. And she still looked gorgeous. She didn't have any makeup on. I mean, there's not many women that can walk out of a hairdresser or be at home with that sort of a look going on and they look spectacular, but she did. So I said, well, look, do you mind if I use it? Because you just look fabulous. She said, oh, yeah, I don't care, whatever. She said it was probably the publicist just trying to protect me. So they are so image conscious that, you know, if they're not done in their finest makeup or wearing their finest clothes or hair perfect, they don't want their audience to see them like that. And I think that's a real shame too, because we don't see the real person. And we will love them just the same if they're real. In fact, we probably will love them even more.
Absolutely. And it's funny you say that, because, I mean, obviously when I saw Midyear on Zoom, he's changed from when I kind of was being a kid. But for me, it didn't matter. I didn't give a damn. Like, I didn't care less. This is one of my idols and getting a chance to talk to him. As you say, I wouldn't care if he's in a Hawaiian shirt, you know? So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of this whole world that's built around them. And sometimes maybe they think that's the way people expect them to behave, isn't it?
Yeah, I got to say that men do look better as they age. Oh. I can't say the same about women, unfortunately. That's a very sexist comment, isn't it? I tend to be a bit like that.
So come here, tell me, how did it all begin for you? Because I'm interested to know, because I mean, you've got plenty of experience. And what got you into broadcast journalism? Was it something that you always wanted to do?
Well, I guess it started from that silly 9-year-old experience. But I went to university. My father had suggested that I do a law course. So I started off doing an arts law course and absolutely hated it. It was so dry and so boring. And after doing a couple of years of that, I just left. I said, I'm going. And I was wanting to run away and join the media circus. I had danced on the national broadcast of the ABC on a for schools program while I was at school, you know, in primary school. And the limousine used to come and pick me and my friend up every Wednesday and take us to the ABC studios where we'd perform on this show and then bring us back to school. And then, as you did when you were kids, everybody would sit in the school auditorium and watch the program on replay. And I was sitting there. So I kind of got a taste of a bit of adulation. And I also got a taste of the smell of film in that television studio. Somehow it got me back, you know, back then it was film, not videotape. So that kind of had an impact too. But when I jumped out of uni, I ran away to the Gold Coast here, which is in Queensland, up north from Melbourne, and joined a radio station. And I was so young and stupid. I think I was about 18 years old. I went to the program manager. I always had a ballsy front. I was never afraid to talk to anybody about anything. And I barreled up to the program manager and said, I dragged a girlfriend of mine up from Melbourne with me. And I said, we want a job. And he said, well, I've only got one job going, and that's as a promotions girl. You know, you go and head out on the beach and wear your bikinis and a sash and pick up rubbish and give away prizes and do all of that. I said, we'll take it. He said, okay, you can both do that. And, of course, I didn't realise that that would mean we'd split the pay. Yeah. So we starved for a whole year doing that. But, you know, I was out there, you know, on air doing, hey, it's Sandy Kay here for 4GG Gold Coast Radio. Come and see us on the beach here and whatever. That was my first job. I came back to Melbourne and hustled my way into a radio station to do traffic reports next. And I knew nothing about radio or traffic, but I just had fun with it. I would sit down and, you know, go, everybody, you know, get off this road because I want to drive home. So you go that way and let me go this way. And I just played with it. It resonated with the audience. Then the news director said to me, would you like to read the news? I said, yeah, sure, I'll do that. I mean, I'm young and naive and stupid. So I started reading the news for that commercial radio station, and all of the very conservative journalists that were working in the newsroom, and they were all male at the time, there were no female voices around at all, they all said to the news director, if you don't sack this girl, she thinks she's a young upstart, who does she think she is, we're going to leave. So they threatened to resign, and of course the news director had.
That's unbelievable.
You know, I was driving home through that road that I told everybody to get off a couple of weeks later with tears streaming down my face. I'd been on air for 6 weeks and I was out already. My career had come to an end. Anyway, as it happened, I, you know, picked myself up and started applying for more jobs. I mean, that was always the beauty of media. You could move from one place to another. And, you know, I'm sort of 250 different jobs down the line now. you know, someone else picked me up. I started researching and producing for radio, ended up hosting my own shows on radio, became a television reporter, producer for news and current affairs. So nobody had ever taught me how to do it. I was thrown into the deep end and had to learn to either sink or swim. I guess I learnt to swim with a bit of sinking along the way, but it's been a terrific road. And I still work as a journalist. In fact, next week I'm going out on a shoot for the BBC who wants something, a documentary segment shot here, the story about Bruce Lee for a series that they're doing. So I still do that and then try and do the podcast as well. So I just don't have time to sleep. You would know what that's like, wouldn't you?
Yes, I do.
I'm awake at 3:30 in the morning thinking, oh, my God, I haven't called back this one. I haven't scheduled this post. I haven't done this. It's really interfering with me, this podcast of mine, A Breath of Fresh Air. I have to say, I'm glad you're enjoying it, but it's killing me.
Come here. I have to ask you, you've talked a lot about TV and radio. Which one is your favourite when you think about it?
I think I like the immediacy of live radio. I like to be on the spot and have to perform. I loved hosting live radio shows, and you'd have this constant turnover of guests and topics that you had to get your head around. So you were always having to go on the fly and thinking, and sometimes the show went really well and sometimes it didn't go quite so well.
Right.
But it was great training. So I like that the rush that you get from live radio. I had a bit of a fail on live TV one day. My mother was dying at home in her bed from cancer, and I had to do a political report live to air at 11 a.m. for Channel 10 here news. I don't know why I'm telling you about my worst ever experience, but you said you love my honesty. Anyway, I was standing out there, and I would never claim to be a political reporter. I was always a light and fluffy reporter. I was always the one that got people to laugh and joke and tell me their home truths. But on this particular day, they had me out doing a political story, and they sent a producer with me. So not only was I not au fait with the political setup and what was going on, but I was always used to spruiking my own words, not spruiking somebody else's words. And on this particular occasion, the producer had given me the words he wanted me to memorize and spit out at this 11 a.m. cross. And I used to play stupid games with myself sometimes when I'd get bored as a television reporter. I would try and see if I could think about something and actually spit out the words about something else. Right. I don't really know why I did that. Again, young, stupid, naive. But on this particular occasion, when he'd given me the words to say, and I really hadn't internalized them very well, I, you know, walked round and round in circles, memorizing what I had to say for this cross. And when the countdown was 3, 2, 1, live, all of a sudden my mind went to an image of my mother lying in her bed dying.
Yeah.
And I lost my words.
Wow.
And I had several seconds of mouth open, blank, dead air. And I thought, that's it. My television career is done. I'm finished. I was so embarrassed. I don't really know how that happened. I was overcome by the emotion. I was, as I said, very embarrassed. I did recover from it. I went on to have a successful TV career beyond that, but I never forgot it. That was the worst day of my entire life.
So your habit had kind of got you into a trouble in a little bit of a way.
Yeah, I'm always getting into trouble.
But it's good. It's good. I think nowadays, if that was to happen, though, I think there'd be much more of kind of an empathic sort of view on that. Whereas, as you know, probably back then, TV was cutthroat in a sense. So you probably thought, oh, God, they're just going to say this is terrible, typical woman, and they're going to just cut you. But thankfully, they didn't, and we have you here. But thinking of your career, I mean, you're interviewing incredibly interesting people on your podcast, but I'm wondering, are some of those people the pinnacle of your career in terms of interviewing, or have, looking back over your whole career, is there anybody there who, when you said, this was the best interview or the most enjoyable interview I've ever done?
Muhammad Ali.
Oh, wow, that's a good one.
He and Elvis Presley were my two heroes since childhood. And when Muhammad Ali came to Australia, I think it was in the late 70s, I was working as a radio reporter in Sydney, and he was in perfect health at the time. And I was sent there to cover the press conference. And I arrived at the hotel where the press conference was, and all the awaiting media were there, and he wasn't turning up. So I grabbed a friend of mine who was working with the show 60 Minutes, and I said, come with me, Mike, let's go and find Muhammad's room. I don't remember how we found his room in that hotel, but somehow we did. And I've knocked on the door, and the big man has opened the door, and he said, you go, you stay. And Mike had to trot off back to the throng of media, and I went inside the room with my little tape recorder. And I sat with him for the next 2 hours.
Oh, wow.
And got this whole dissertation from Muhammad Ali on motivation. In fact, just recently I found the cassette. I should put it out there, really, shouldn't I?
Definitely.
I should make some use of it.
It was my next question. I was going to say, I hope you have a copy of that, because that is incredible.
I do. Yeah. He was amazing. Not only did he, you know, give me this whole diatribe about motivation,
yes,
but he also did all of these radio station IDs. Hi, this is Muhammad Ali for 2WS.
Wow.
And you're listening to. When I got back to the radio station, I was the toast of the day. the throng of media, I come down from the room with, his wife wasn't very happy with me. We all came down to the media together, and I remember the filthy looks that I was getting from all the media that had been waiting all this time to see him. But the radio station thought that I was just it in a bit getting all of this. And then when he came to Melbourne a couple of weeks later, I met up with him again. So, yes, meeting and getting to know him a little bit and just having that one-on-one personal chat without any boundaries was just exceptional. That's the highlight. I guess the other one was the Queen. Her Majesty, that was kind of interesting too. We were invited upon the Royal Yacht Britannia when I was working for a television station to meet her as she came to town. And there was copious amounts of correspondence telling you what the protocol was. And as a, you know, young 20-something-year-old rebel, I wasn't interested in protocol at all. So when she kind of came past me, I took a step forward to her and asked her if she ever wished that she wasn't. Oh, and she was horrified with the question. And, that was a good encounter too. That was a lot of fun.
But again, I like
to make a bit of a nuisance of myself.
No, it's funny because I think styles, you know, the Australian style, which is kind of in some ways stereotypical, and the Irish style, which is some way stereotypical as well. There is a kind of a brashness that we share, isn't it, as a culture people. We kind of go, you know, sure, look, we'll just get out and try it. You know, a bit of a have a go, Joe, sort of thing. And Irish people are very good at that. And I know Australian people have a bit of, as you say, the ballsy to go, oh, I don't care, I'm just going to try it. Is that still around today in Australian media? Do you still get a lot of people like that?
Actually, the young Australian media is really disappointing these days. We saw a lot of that during our recent election and leading up to the election, where they didn't seem to have any balls to ask the hard questions. They were like a pack of tame cats. They were much more like the Asian media, which is, you know, very reticent to ask anything out of place. It was really disappointing because we, and I think you're right, I mean, a veteran Australian or Irish journalist has the gumption to ask any of the questions that you want to know. And if there are issues on the table, you're not afraid to go for it. The UK media, the British media, on the other hand, they just want to go for the jugular. I think they go too far. I had a case a few years ago, you may remember, where an Australian radio station, a pair of radio station hosts had called up where Kate was having her baby at the time.
Yeah, that's
when
right,
she
yeah.
was having, and they had pranked her, and they got into a host of trouble about that, and it became worldwide headlines. And the British tabloid was so severe, so harsh about this, and I set up a whole lot of interviews for this radio host who was, you know, they hadn't meant to do anything wrong at the time, but they were really remorseful about what they'd done and the trouble that they'd caused because she was, you know, just going into labour and whatever. But the British media, I shouldn't say British, the British media were just savage. The Australian media were tough, but not nowhere near what the British media were like. And I didn't have much experience with the Irish media at the time. But I think that media representatives generally have gone a lot more soft these days. The young kids that are coming up through the ranks don't seem to have, I don't know whether it's a lack of passion or a lack of balls, but it doesn't appear to be quite what it used to be. Is your observation the same?
Yeah, I think what's happening is that in some cases they don't see it as a long-term job. So they're probably thinking, you know, maybe I want to be a press secretary or something, because you do see a lot of that happening where journalists, especially in Ireland, a lot of journalists go from working for a newspaper because it doesn't pay very well. There's not many newspapers, for example. We only have two TV stations, and we have a couple of national and regional stations on radio. So there's not much work for them. And I think what happens is sometimes, I'm only guessing here, but sometimes they kind of think that way and they kind of go, oh, well, I could be a press secretary for this leader of the party that he's a representative of in 3 or 4 years' time. So I'm going to stay on their good side. So they'll ask the kind of so-called probing questions. But as you said earlier, they might have given them the questions in advance. Now, there are some veterans. One of my podcast episodes was with a female journalist, Carol Coleman, who is, she's here with RTE, which is their national broadcaster. She interviewed George Bush Jr. And, you know, her interview's famous because, as she said it herself in her own podcast, the American embassy in Dublin, which is where it was taking place, they expected this girl to come up, a young Colleen, you know, a young Irish Colleen, to come up and ask all the nice questions. So, are you enjoying the weather in Ireland? And, you know, Carol grilled him over the Iraq war. She grilled him over the voting, you know, the voting scandals and everything. And, you know, 3 or 4 times Bush had to actually turn around and say, can you let me finish? Because she just wouldn't let him finish. But she knew that she only had 15 minutes with him. So she didn't want to spend those 15 minutes, as you say, talking about, you know, happy go nonsense stuff, not when it's the president of America. So, yeah, I don't think that would happen today, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, well, they're much more tame. I mean, even we saw that with President
Trump.
Thank you. We saw that with President Trump.
We're all trying to forget that one, all right? Yeah.
I've forgotten his name. Where the American media were really tame also. They wouldn't go in with the hard questions either, and they wouldn't interrupt him, and they were very reticent, very sit back and let him have his say. Yeah.
When you talk about Australian TV, is it based on British TV or is it based on American TV or is it a combination? Because before you answer, we get a lot of Australian soaps, as I'm sure you gather. We have them all, Home Away, we had Neighbours and all that kind of thing. Even going right back to the Sullivans, I think it was, and, you know, all those kind of things. And we had the Flying Doctors as well. So we know a lot about Australian culture. And as you know, a lot of Irish people go back and forth between Australia and Ireland a lot. But I'm just wondering about your TV. How is it? Where does it base itself from?
Well, we've always had a culture, both in music and in television, of taking the best from the UK and from America, and then our own little industry as well. It's actually quite interesting because what we don't get is very much from Canada at all, not music and not television, but certainly from it's a mix of the UK and the US predominantly with Australian. We have one national broadcaster that prides itself on doing stuff from right around the world. So there are various shows on air from every corner of the earth, but predominantly on commercial television, it's UK, US and Australian stuff, yeah. So we know about you too.
Of course. And what about us, New Zealand? Does there be much cross collaboration between medias in both of those countries, say yourselves and them?
Not really, no. We get a few of their movies, you know, a couple of their stuff. We see them as kind of not really the poor cousin, but they're a little bit behind us, and we're a little bit behind America. So we don't really do too much with them, no.
Yeah, and you know, as a child and as a young teenager, there was a lot of popularity at the time with Australian movies. The Australian Film Board was financing a lot of films. And, you know, we used to watch like an Australian movie every week. Like, and of course, you
really?
Know, yeah, it was amazing. And, you know, that's what I'm saying. We had such a good culture link with Australia. I think Australia, I think the way it looks is the Irish, they, you know, traditionally, they want to go to America and they want to go to Australia before they even want to go to Britain. You know, Britain was a necessity maybe a couple of decades ago. Nowadays, they have a choice and they'll either say America or Australia, and then Canada probably third. So, you know, there's a lot of connections between Ireland and Australia. And as well, you know, we have these connections with our sport as well. You know, we play, you know, the combination rules between the Gaelic football and the Australian rules. And then we love to hammer you guys in the rugby as well. So it's so it's good. But I just noticed recently that Neighbours has cancelled. Sorry, they've stopped filming. The show is over.
Thank goodness it's done.
It's a huge culture.
You don't need to be watching our soaps. We don't even watch our soaps.
That was my question. No. That was my question, because it's so big over here that's been cancelled. But
I know, and in England also, it's just crazy how you guys have taken to it. I swear, it doesn't have that big an audience here. No, we're quite happy to see the back of it. It's been going too long. Australian movies, Australian television don't have such a great reputation here. We much prefer to watch the more slickly produced UK or American productions. The one exception, I have to say, I don't know if you've seen the movie Elvis yet. Is that open there already?
My wife has seen it and she said it's one of the greatest movies she's ever seen. So yeah, there you go.
So Baz Luhrmann is a director who lives in Sydney, who's made several movies. And some of them, I mean, he's a bit over the top, in my opinion, with some of his techniques. But this Elvis movie, if we claim that as being an Australian movie, a lot of it was shot here in the country. They've recreated Beale Street, Memphis, and Graceland itself here. That I'm definitely happy to say that's an Australian movie. But many of the movies and TV shows that we've put out, I'm just like, no, it's cringeworthy. We don't like them.
And do you still have a lot of regional radio? Because I've spoken to a few, you know, radio broadcasts, and I always ask that question. Or do you have the same problem that America has in that a lot of the radio stations are franchised?
Yes and no for that. We do still have a lot. Most of the regional stations these days that are not franchised are community stations. And in saying that, my little show, A Breath of Fresh Air, goes out to, you know, hundreds of stations right across Australia, to these stations that find it very difficult to program for themselves. But the syndication is becoming greater. We're having conglomerates buying up a lot of the regional hubs also. But they're experimenting with that to see what works and what doesn't. And they're finding that if you don't have your local hosts in the morning, nobody wants to hear something that's on relay from a major city. They want to know what's going on in their own towns and surrounds. So a lot of them are putting in local news segments themselves, and they're having to go to quite a lot of expense to make their regional sounds unique. So I don't know what the future of that is. It's going to be quite interesting to see.
It seems to be the same all over the world. I suppose what we can do is we can talk about podcasting a little bit, and mainly podcasting with your show. When I heard your show first, I immediately recognized it, that I said, okay, this is not a podcast, it's a radio show. And I guess that because I just listen to a lot of radio, and I said, that's great. But when you created the radio show, did you think about it as a podcast as well, or did that come later?
Yeah, it came much later. In fact, my podcast's only been up for a couple of months.
Yeah, you were saying.
And
that.
I wonder, does it bother you that it's a radio show format?
No, I think it's much better. It's really well put together. You know, you always know that you're going to get the same quality each time. I think that's so important.
Yeah, well, you get the same length, you get the same quality, and you get three distinct different guests. It would certainly make my life easier if I stretched it to a podcast format and had one guest per hour. But given that it is that radio show and going out there at the moment, it's three guests. So it's divided, for anybody who hasn't heard it, it's divided into three segments. The first one, and as I said earlier, I concentrate on the music and the artists of the 60s, 70s and 80s. That's my music. So the first segment is an artist of that ilk who's making new music, putting out new music, you know, in that time frame. The second segment is always a one-hit wonder, and I love chasing down. I use all my journalistic skills to chase up these guys who've done a one-hit wonder, and I'm always calling for suggestions. Tell me who you want to hear from, because it's hard to come up with the ideas all the time. So we kind of just dissect that one-hit wonder and talk about their lives and what they're doing now. I think, you know, I just had a chat with Billy Swan, who did that song, I Can Help. And that was his massive one-hit wonder. He's really done nothing very much since. He's produced for people like Tony Joe White, and he's worked with T-Bone Walker and stuff, but he's never had a hit, although he's wanted to. And then the third segment of the show is really listener's choice. It's like whoever you want to hear from. Is there an artist that fits into that 60s, 70s, 80s mold that you haven't thought of maybe for years that you'd like to hear having a chat to? And then what I try to do, I don't know if you've heard, is put the person who's requested this artist on air with the artist, let them say hello.
Wow.
So I had Jennifer Warne on the show one day. Remember, she did the soundtrack for Dirty Dancing, and a guy had requested her. He was a guy from a little country town in regional Victoria who was desperate. He's been a huge fan of Jennifer Warne's for years and years and years. I said, okay, well, I'll get her, and will you join me on the Zoom on a certain day? He said, yeah, okay. And he was gobsmacked. He was so shy and so nervous and could not believe that he's meeting Jennifer Warne for real. He said, I've dreamt about you since I was a kid. I've loved you. So it makes fabulous radio podcast material.
Yeah.
And I'm making somebody happy. I've made his day. And that to me is worth more than all the money you could pay me to make this program. And I have to tell you, they pay me nothing. But that's fantastic. So I'm always on the lookout for any listener to tell me who they'd like to hear from, and I'll oblige and do my very best to find that person. But gosh, it's hard getting ears on your podcast, isn't it? It's
it
a
is.
Whole different world.
Yeah. I just the only thing I can say is I talk to a lot of podcasters, and I was recently on a nice podcast that actually interviews podcasters, and we did have this discussion, and I think the essence of the issue is here that you have to kind of toughen it out and plan it for the long term, because I think what happened is with COVID, and obviously people were left to, you know, a lot not to do, a lot of people started taking up podcasting because it's quite easy to do, you don't need very expensive equipment and so on, and I think a lot of those people will tag away, fly away as the year or two goes on, and you'll be left with the core podcast. And I think that's when, you know, if you have your podcast up and running a couple of years, I think that's when it will really be an advantage. As I still think podcasting, in terms of, you know, getting it out there, it's in its infancy. And as you know, with everything, whether it's radio, television, there's always loads of people starting off, and then through circumstances they begin to fall away. And if you're still there at that point, that's when it's good. So have faith. So I can say to you, it's rare for me to give you advice, but I'm saying to you, have faith, because I love your podcast. And I'm nodding every time you're talking about those three segments, because I love that. I think that's brilliant. And I said to myself, this is great. And I know you did put out something, and I said you get Ivor Davies from Ice House, you know, because like I'm a great fan of 80s music, and I particularly love Ivor and Ice House, because you know, they've done really well in the UK and Ireland. They still have a lot of hits, but you know, it's brilliant, and you know, to be able to see them still around as well. I've seen a couple of live gigs from them, so if you can get him, that would be fantastic.
I will do that for you. You stay tuned and tell all your friends to listen and send me requests, because I want to hear them. Give me more and more work.
I'll give you a full list.
Okay. All right. Great. Okay.
How can people listen to your podcast? Obviously, it's available on all podcasts, but tell me about your website. You have a website. You just mentioned it a while back there.
I do have a website. It's called abreathoffreshair.com.au. You have to put the AU in for Australia. And you can listen to the podcast on there. You can subscribe to it up there too, if you like. And then the podcast, and then the website also has various tidbits of information about those three guests. It has clips of them playing live, and it also contains the extended version of the Zoom chat that I've had with them, so the unedited version. Eventually what I'm hoping to do is start up a Patreon and put that behind a paywall. If people are interested, they might have to subscribe. But at the moment, it's all up there free. So if there's a guest that you're interested in, you can really sit back and put your feet up and enjoy our conversation as if you're in the room with us.
Brilliant. Sandy, come here. One last question. What are you listening to or reading at the moment? I ask all my guests this because I'm always interested in finding out.
Well, it's a good question. I don't think I have a great answer for it. I'm listening to all the music that my guests
That's a brilliant answer.
I have to listen to a whole lot of new music that goes through to see which I'd like to feature. I also do a new music this week segment for radio, for the radio station in America. So I've got to be up with what's coming out this week. So that's music. I've got music coming and going in and out of my head all day, every head, but I'm not complaining about that. I do love music. And reading, the one book that I do want to read, I did an interview the other day with John Ilsley from Dire Straits, and he's got a new book out, My Life with Dire Straits, and it sounds fascinating. So I've just ordered myself a copy of that on Amazon, and I'm going to get my head buried in that when I get a spare minute.
Brilliant. Sandy, thanks so much for joining me on the podcast today. It was a pleasure talking to you. I think I could have gone for another hour because there's so much more we could chat about.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate you inviting me on, and I love what you do. Keep it up.
Thanks a million. Guys, you've been listening to the Comfortable Spot podcast. My name is Ken Sweeney, and I'll see you really, really soon. So take care, y'all. Bye-bye. Oh,